Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program. It's Thursday, December the 13th, 2008. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, it's 18. Thank you, Brent. Brent Creeley, my producer, reminds me I'm missing a decade there. Okay, I'll move it up.
There are a lot of people who were born, who lived through the 60s, yeah, that have a missing decade. So,
well, and of course, I was a spoof on Nightline, if everybody remembers that. Dun, 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 dun. And every night, Ted Koppel would tell us what day it was, right?
Yes.
During the Iranian hostage crisis back in the...
Yeah, I remember.
Back in that's, the... Back in right. the... What, 79 or whenever it
that's
was.
When it started, and then it early
went over into
into the 80s.
To the Reagan. Well, when Reagan was elected, they let him go.
Yeah.
Or the day he was inaugurated. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. We're your historians, and and we might occasionally skip a decade, but hey, who's counting, right?
Probably nothing important happened anyway.
Fred Jackson with AFR News and OneNewsNow.com. Good morning to you, Fred.
Yes, I am the keep you up to date. You may be the historians.
Right. Well, Brent Creeley, our producer over here, I told him when he first got the job, if I'm ever mentioned a date and I skip a whole decade, you have freedom to intervene right there. Freedom to speak and correct your boss. And so he did. All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Hey, listen, we don't often have guests here outside of our regular guests. We have a special guest, Jay Warner Wallace. He's the author of Cold Case Christianity. And Frank Turek has him on often on the weekends here on AFR on his show. But we're going to have him on ours at 10:30, and he's going to talk about the Christmas. And Jay Warner Wallace was an investigator, and he's a senior. He's also a senior fellow at the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. But he was a cold case detective for many years. So
Los Angeles Police Department.
Yes, comes at it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. So you're going to enjoy this interview we got coming up at the bottom of the hour with Jay Warner Wallace. Fred, good morning again. What's happening? What's leading the news today?
Well, it's one of those days where pick any story almost, and that's going to lead the news. Jeff Flake, the Republican senator from Arizona, has his farewell speech today.
No good.
Senate. And conservatives have brought their hankies. They'll be crying. They'll be sorry to see him leave. Sarcasm meter went right over to
you're 10. Pegging out.
He's leaving now?
It's a farewell speech today.
Okay. All right.
So I wonder if he'll criticize President Trump, whom he absolutely despises.
No, he wouldn't do that, would he?
Think he'd have to show a little class and maybe try to bridge the gap there, or do you think he takes another parting shot?
Are you a betting man?
I'm not a betting man. If I were.
So, Steve Jordahl, if that happens in the next hour or so, we may hear a little bit of that. But there was a bombshell dropped yesterday by the lawyers for former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. They were in court because he's facing some possible sentencing. The Mueller investigation believed that he lied somewhere along the way. But here's what happened. You will remember that the FBI gave Michael Flynn a call, said they wanted to interview him while he was still National Security Advisor, so they went over to the White House. But according to Flynn's lawyer yesterday, the FBI said to Michael Flynn, hey, you don't need a lawyer present when we come and talk to you. You know, there's nothing to it. Well, the argument for the judge is he should have had a lawyer present because we know now the FBI attempted to use portions of that conversation to say that he perjured himself. All right. So the judge in this case, U.S. District Judge Emmett G. Sullivan, yesterday when he heard that, he has now ordered the Mueller team to produce all the transcripts from that interview and any discussions that went on prior to the interview with regards to did they really tell Michael Flynn not to have a lawyer present or don't bother bringing a lawyer to the conversation because it's just a conversation.
Yeah,
that's the allegation.
Because it wasn't just a conversation, as we now know. they were seeking to trap this guy.
Yes.
And get him to misremember or make a mistake or lie, which he did not lie. I'm sure we'll get to that in just a second. But they wanted to then squeeze him to go after Trump. So lies all the way around from this particular team of FBI in this investigation.
Absolutely. And this judge, he has the power to toss Flynn's guilty plea, because Flynn did plead guilty, in order to try to reduce any sentence that he may face in this. Not only that, but could order the Mueller investigation to, or the Justice Department, which Mueller is under, to compensate Flynn because he's lost his home.
Yeah, he had to sell his house to for legal costs.
Yes. So this case is far from over. This judge is the same one who overturned the 2008 conviction of former U.S. Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska. Some folks may remember that. So this case is getting really, really interesting. And so we're going to watch that. By the way, the judge wants that transcript on his desk tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, that should already be available. I'm sure any conversations have already been transcribed. That should be, from the way most of us operate, that takes no more time, I would guess, than just simply printing off a copy of what they already have and putting it on the judge's desk.
Yeah. So
I'm glad, by the way, because General Flynn, as far as I can tell, is an honorable man, and he has been mistreated by the Mueller investigation. And this is one of those times when I believe the government should pay up, and they should reimburse him for all of his expenses. I guess he'd probably never be able to buy his home back if it was sold to somebody. I don't know how long. Maybe it's a family home. Maybe his kids were raised in it. So that would be kind of tragic, but at least he'll be reimbursed as he goes on into his later years.
And as some have pointed out, this is the same FBI who treated Hillary Clinton's interview much differently. She was able to have a lawyer present.
She wasn't even put under oath.
That's right. Wasn't even put under oath.
And Peter Strzok.
Peter Strzok, the FBI agent, who we know hates Trump.
And who was involved in this incident. He also wrote the statement for James Comey exonerating Hillary Clinton before they even interviewed her.
Oh, it just smells.
It's rotten.
Yeah, it just really smells.
You know, I don't want to belabor this point, but you're making the comparison between the way General Flynn and some of President Trump's circle of friends have been treated compared to the way Hillary Clinton's was when it was clear what happened in that case, smashing hard drives, right?
Yes.
Physically smashing hard drives.
And bleaching them.
Am I correct on the physically smashing hard drives?
Yes, with hammers.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
Out and back.
Then you got the guy who put the server in her basement, pleading the fifth, or in her bathroom downstairs, wherever it was. Anyway, the reason that Hillary Clinton had that, when she's Secretary of State, had her own server put in the bathroom downstairs in the laundry room, wherever it was, she wanted to hide her activity from congressional oversight.
Right.
That's the point. That was the whole point of doing that. And here is James Comey and Justice, the FBI, when they go to interview her about this, don't even put her under oath.
Right.
All this, you know, they can say whatever they want to, James Comey and all these people, and they can point at President Trump, say, you know, he did this or he did that, and Russia, Russia, Russia. That whole episode. We won't relive it, but because it's been well documented. But all those things, including all the text messages from the FBI officials about wanting to stop Trump or interfere with him, or, you know, we got to stop him, got to save the world, basically.
Yeah.
All that was just like it appeared to be. Mm-hmm. It was what it appeared to be.
Right.
And then they tried to basically say it wasn't.
Yep.
So, and you know, the one point in all that says to me, this was a bias investigation in quotes for Hillary Clinton. By the way, don't forget Bill Clinton her husband met with the Attorney General of the United States
Lynch.
In a private meeting that wasn't supposed to be known about.
Right.
Wasn't supposed to be. Only a local television station in Phoenix found out about it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't supposed to be known about. So you have the key witness, the person being investigated, husband, former president, meeting with the acting U.S. Attorney General in a private meeting. I don't even think she recused herself. But anyway, the point is, when you don't put Hillary Clinton under oath for the 2 or 3 hours that they talked to her, the FBI, and was it Peter Strzok who was interviewing her?
Yep.
Yeah, and
that's LOL. I'm sorry. That's LOL. This is
if it wasn't so.
It's a Saturday Night Live
corrupt.
Skit.
If it wasn't so corrupt. It'd be,
it's a crime show comedy.
And my understanding is that some of the FBI agents who were listening. Okay, now the ones who interviewed General Flynn, even Peter Strzok said, "I don't think he's lying." Hmm. On the other hand, with Hillary Clinton, there were at least a couple who said, what was the exact wording? They said that's in the, I don't know, they said too difficult to believe category.
Yep.
Things that Hillary Clinton was saying in explaining how all this.
They gave her top aide immunity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Inexplicably.
Yes.
Gave them immunity.
Well, it's not inexplicable.
Well, that's true.
You can explain it because they gave her top aides immunity so that they couldn't be pressured
right.
to tell the truth about her.
Right. And then she isn't put under oath. But if you have one thing that screams out, this is collusion between the FBI and the Hillary Clinton campaign, if that's what you want to put it, collusion.
Yeah.
I like using that word since it's been not used very much. that is, don't put her under oath.
Right.
That's all you need to know, really.
Yes.
Don't put her under oath.
Absolutely corrupt.
All right, so you're listening to Today's Issues. By the way, if you would like to watch the show on the internet, it's Facebook and YouTube. You go to and you type in Today's Issues. And we have a lot of folks who watch and listen online. Facebook and YouTube, just type in Today's Issues and we are there. You can engage with the other listeners and we'll be posting the stories that we're discussing and talking about. And other stuff on our Facebook page in particular. So check that out. And we archive our shows, you podcast our shows. Podcasts are available at AFR.net, right? AFR.net, you can download the podcast of this program or any of the other programs we have here on American Family Radio. Next story, Fred.
Well, let's stick with the Clintons for another few minutes.
Why not?
The House Oversight Committee will be taking a look at the Clinton Foundation today. This will be the last crack that the Republicans have before the Democrats take over the House. And they'll be looking at the allegations of pay-to-play. And we've talked about this many times over the months, that while Hillary Clinton was still Secretary of State, there was the allegation that she was mixing that business with enticing money into the Clinton Foundation. So the House is going to be looking at that. Now, it's kind of interesting. If you follow the Hillary Clinton travels, she was in India last weekend. Dancing the night away. Well, she was there with her good friend, Uba Abedin.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They went to a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
They went to a wedding, and the wedding, the daughter is the daughter of India's richest and the world's 19th richest man, whose wealth is valued around $43 billion.
Man, that is more than twice what I have in the bank.
I know.
That never gets old, does it?
Anyway, Mukesh Ambani is the daddy, and he also happened to donate to the Clinton Foundation.
Who's your daddy?
Oh my gosh.
Fred.
Mukesh. There it is, folks. I don't know.
We're getting close to Christmas, so we're a little lighthearted. Haven't been drinking any eggnog, nothing like that, folks. I'm just saying.
No, it's just that on and on these stories go.
So this guy gave... Previously to the Clinton Foundation?
Has been given to the Clinton Foundation a long
Big,
time.
Big, rich guy, and happens to invite Hillary Clinton. Okay.
Yeah, the other guests, you know, they were flown in. Oh, by the way, one of the other guests was Arianna Huffington. Think Huffington Post.
Yes.
She doesn't own it anymore, but
right.
She's a good friend of the Clintons.
Yes.
All right, just keep you up to date on the social calendar of Hillary Clinton.
So you're telling me that Hillary goes, that would be a good movie series probably, Hillary Goes to India.
Yeah,
you know,
with Uber.
Now, she didn't dance with Uma. What's her name again?
Uma Abedin.
Uma Abedin.
Yeah.
She wasn't dancing with her the whole time, was she?
No, no.
Okay.
No, she got a nice hat on, though.
Yeah. All right. So, and by the way, we do need to note that after it became clear that Hillary Clinton had lost the 2016 election, strangely, the giving to the Clinton Foundation dried up.
Yes.
So it just leads me to ask, was the giving to the Clinton Foundation
while she was
Secretary of State and running for president predicated on the expectation that she would become president, and therefore the gifts, I'm using air quotes here, the gifts to the Clinton Foundation might be paid back.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like a conspiracy theory, folks.
Yeah. And the whole Uranium One deal.
Oh.
Where, you know.
Yeah.
It was a big Christmas present to the Russians to get how much of our uranium?
Well, like the company was 25% or something?
Insane. And then Bill Clinton, gets half a mil for a speaking engagement.
Yes, $500,000.
Well, in his defense.
In Russia.
I would have to say that.
I'll take it.
That I have spoken on occasion and been given $500,000.
You're lying.
Yeah.
You're lying.
You're a betting man. Would you say that was a lie? Yeah, $500,000. Yeah, that's.
You think somebody gives you $500,000 to speak?
Nobody's that good a speaker.
They might want something from you. You think? When your wife is the Secretary of State of the United States of America and you're a Russian company.
And the expected next president of the United States.
You think?
Yeah.
Hey, wink, wink. Why don't you come and speak to our group? We'll give you $500,000.
Nothing to see here.
And we'll buy your plane ticket.
But the stars have fallen on Bill Clinton and Hillary.
How's that?
You may be aware they've been on this speaking tour.
Yes.
You know, a night with Bill and Hillary.
Yeah.
Have you heard about the ticket prices?
Is this before or after India dancing?
This is before.
Okay. Right.
All right. I think the first stop was up in Toronto, Canada, and then it went on from there, and it went downhill. They had to reduce the prices over and over.
They can't get anyone to show up.
They can't get people to show up. They are yesterday's Democratic power.
Yes.
Now, that's the indication there.
Now, Alexa Ocasio-Cortez.
Yes.
Now, she can probably drum up some big crowds.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I was looking at the news. Bill and Hillary Clinton will be at the Holiday Inn Express in Urbana.
Urbana,
Illinois.
Okay.
So, you know, if you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You want to hear Bill and Hillary talk.
They rent the dining room.
Yeah, and they're
that
expecting
seats 20 people.
They're expecting a capacity audience of 117.
There you go.
So, you know, get your tickets now.
You know, it's a little bit sad. A little bit sad, right? I mean that these two, Bill and Hillary Clinton, were at the top of the heap for so long, and now they can't get anyone to show up at their big speaking tour promoting her book.
I know.
A little sad,
Ed is wanting, Fred, you and I to work up some sadness here.
Yes.
Some bogus, phony sadness for the Clintons.
Not gonna happen?
I just wonder if he spent that half mil from the... I would like to sing that speech. How many hours
That's been a humdinger.
$500,000 to speak one time... In Russia a few years ago.
Was it in Russia?
Yeah. He went over there.
It was in Russia?
Pardon me.
Oh, my goodness. The nerve of these people on the left.
I'm almost positive it was.
They colluded.
I want to say he flew first class. I don't even think he flew coach going over there. Yeah, carry on, Fred. I'm going to do the research on this. Bill Clinton speaking in Russia.
Oh, the Russians. Oh, my goodness.
Dateline Poland. The world's people who are concerned about alleged global warming, they're 2 weeks into their meeting.
Yeah.
And they say they may be able to come up with some kind of solution to deal with global warming, the threat of global warming. Hmm. But here's one of the proposals, folks, and you better listen to this. A prominent researcher is proposing establishing a, quote, climate passport for people driven from their homes by the impact of global warming. So basically, here is the drill on this. They would get this climate passport, which would allow them to go to any country in the world that signs on to this treaty and demand to be taken in.
Oh, my goodness. So, and of course, the trick is, how do you determine who's been displaced because of global warming or climate change?
Yeah.
That category is obviously so broad and so subjective. Mm-hmm. Anybody who wants to come to America, just as long as they got this passport, that's nuts.
We're entering so much right here, I'd like to be displaced to Naples.
Get yourself one of these passports, Tim.
Okay. Yep. Sanibel Island. Can I sign up for that? I got to go to...
It sounds nice.
Saskatchewan.
What? Saskatchewan? This time of the year?
That's what I mean. Anyway, so you got... So this is called a what? Now, they've been over there 2 weeks. They're about to outdo the Olympics here.
Yeah, they've been
Actually brilliant. If you're a globalist and you don't care about borders, that is a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
If you've been harmed by climate change, you get this passport. You can go anywhere in the world. They can't stop you.
So who's signing up for this? What countries are signing up for this?
Well, it's the proposal comes from Hans Joachim Schillenhuber. All right.
We got the names today.
I knew a guy by that name when I was in the sixth grade. Fred just said
Hans Joachim Schillenhuber.
Schmidt.
He's with the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, and he says this climate passport is modeled on a similar certificate given to refugees of Russia's civil war in the 1920s. So he's borrowing that idea. But this would be a climate passport.
Okay, his name is my name, too. Next story.
Next story. Well, somewhat related, Laura Ingraham put out an editorial yesterday with regards to the true costs of illegal immigration. Now, I could read the whole thing, but I'm going to give you an example that she is putting out there. The cost to the American taxpayer of illegal immigrants coming into this country. She says, let's look at health care. Even though illegals are forbidden access from federally funded health care, Forbes magazine estimates that 3.9 million uninsured illegals receive about $4.6 billion in health services from the federal government, federal taxes, and $2.8 billion from state and local taxpayers goes to illegal immigrants, and $3 billion from higher payments by insured Americans. In other words, you are paying it because your costs are jacked up. Now, what is she saying there? They get free health care, but the healthcare providers just up the premiums on those of us who have to pay for healthcare. Altogether, she says, Americans cross-subsidize healthcare for unauthorized immigrants to the tune of $18.5 billion a year. Do a little bit of math. President Trump says he needs $5 billion to build the wall to secure our southern border. Mm-hmm. $5 billion is a whole lot cheaper than the $18.5 billion that's being spent now, basically to cover the costs of food, shelter, education, health care for illegals.
You know, another thing related to the border wall is I was reading yesterday, somebody was saying, you know, you have two options here to stop people from entering our country illegally, especially these caravans of people, these folks coming. Either A, you can put a wall up, like we do put fences up in America to physically prevent them from coming across. Or B, you can port the border security or border agents, border patrol, and have them physically confront these folks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As it go. And the guy was saying, what's more humane? What's less likely to get people hurt? A wall? Mm-hmm. Or having to go out and physically arrest and get in confrontation?
Well, plus, then you got to decide what to do with them. And under President Obama, it was catch and release.
Exactly. So why wouldn't any sane person just be for a physical barrier?
Right. Mm-hmm.
How hard is this? This shouldn't be Republican or Democrat. We'll be back. Hey, you're not going to want to miss this interview we got coming up with Jay Warner Wallace.
We got nothing but Italians on this show.
We're changing lives one question at a time. Trivia Friday is educational programming.
What big cat can't roar?
That's pathetic.
The mime cat. I've seen them. They got those white gloves on their paws.
You use milk to sweeten your breath.
In the first century.
What happened when the milk soured?
You got trouble.
Yeah, right, that's there. A good.
See, you don't get a second date. I'll just tell you that right now.
Trivia Friday, 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. 2019 is upon us, and we're going to be going back to Washington, D.C. and to Williamsburg for our spiritual heritage tours. And if you've been wanting to go, maybe this is the year for you. These tours fill up several months in advance. And one of the reasons they do is because we have an actual historian, a professional historian that comes on our tour with us. His name is Stephen McDowell. He's the president of the Providence Foundation, and he knows more about early American history, especially the Christian influence on early American history. He knows more than anybody I know. So, if you want to go with us, you can find out more information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's in June and September. Pick the month you want to go. Find out more information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Hi, this is Todd Stearns from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu.
The war on Christmas started early this year. From Newaygo, Michigan, the atheists are up in arms over the three wise men. The giant wise men are mounted on the roof of the elementary school. The atheists are demanding they be removed. Separation of church and state, they say. The Huffington Post says Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is bigoted and sexist. They also accuse Santa Claus of being a homophobic bigot. Meanwhile, Huffington Post also says we need to stop wishing people a Merry Christmas. They say we need to be more inclusive and respect other beliefs. Instead of Merry Christmas, we're supposed to greet everyone with a festive Happy Holidays. What does that even mean? Happy Holidays. Which holiday? St. Patrick's Day? Maybe it's Arbor Day. Well, I hate to break it to the Huffington Post, but the First Baptist Church Choir is not singing Joy to the World to celebrate an oak tree. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Well, you can count on me to do the research, ladies and gentlemen. And I did it. I actually Googled something.
Googled.
Oh. Yeah, remember when you used to go to the library?
Take
your book selection up and get the...
Yeah, the Reader's Guide to Periodical Literature. Yeah. You'd have to write down magazines, the date and everything. You'd have to hand it to the librarian. Yeah. She'd go down and see if the magazines had been stolen. Then you go
write your report, verbatim from the
five sources.
From the Time magazine.
Yeah.
So I'll... Try to change a few words in there.
Well, yeah, you got to.
Huh? So, you can have the history teachers going, I've seen this essay seven times today. All right, so anyway, the question was, did my memory serve me correctly that former President Bill Clinton get paid $500,000 to speak in Russia sometime in the last few years? And the answer is yes. I will quote from The Hill, which is a credible news source. Mm-hmm. This is an article from...
Which actually leans left sometimes, so...
Yes. This is an article. I just typed Donald Trump, Russia. What's the date on this?
It's October 19th, 2017.
Yeah, 2017. I'll just quote for this, and then we shall move forward just to... quote, as he, that is Bill Clinton, prepared to collect a $500,000 payday in Moscow in 2010, Bill Clinton sought clearance from the State Department. Insert
His wife.
Insert laugh my head off. Anyway, back to the quoting here. The State Department, to meet with a key board member of Russian nuclear energy from Rosatom, which at the time needed the Obama administration's approval for a controversial uranium deal, government records show. So, in fact, Bill Clinton did get $500,000. That's right. $500,000 to go.
Speak?
Yes, in Moscow in 2010.
And the Obama administration cleared it, of course, even though his wife, was she Secretary of State in 2010?
I think she was.
Yeah.
I think she was. Anyway.
At 17, no.
So.
2017, no.
No, well, but he was going in 2010? Or was
yes.
he going in?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This story was written in 2017, but no.
He went
he
in
made that speech when she was Secretary of State.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, people. We all know somebody pays you $500,000 to speak.
To quote-unquote speak.
They want something.
Yeah.
They want something. And what they want is favors from you because you know the president and you know the Secretary of State.
Right.
And we're Russian businesses. How can you help us?
Yeah.
And they're worried about Trump building a hotel in Moscow.
Right.
Potentially.
Yes.
Huh?
When he was as a businessman.
Yeah, that's just. Anyway. All right. Jay Warner Wallace is our guest now. He's from coldcasechristianity.com. He's a good friend of Dr. Frank Turek, so keeps questionable company. but nevertheless, we invited him on. Jay Warner Wallace, thanks for joining us, brother. This is Tim, Ed, and Fred.
Well, thanks for having me, but you might regret after you know, entrusting Frank Turek with anything is always a mistake. So that's
do we call you Jay Warner or Mr. Wallace?
Just call me Jim. There's another Jim Wallace from Sojourners in Washington, D.C., and I do radio sometimes. I get confused for him, so that's why I use Jay Warner Wallace.
Okay. Well, Jim, thanks for being on with us. Tell our listeners who don't know, haven't heard you on with Frank, your background.
Well, I'm a cold case detective here in Los Angeles County. I work homicides that haven't been solved because there's no statute of limitations on a homicide. And that's really how I got my start. I became a Christian pretty late in life at 35, and I did that just by applying the same kinds of techniques we use. We get these old cases, they occurred in the past, and we only have reports, and sometimes the people who wrote the reports, those detectives are no longer around, and the victims or the suspects, rather, or the witnesses aren't even around anymore. Hopefully the suspect is. We can go back and make an arrest. But you're always reading reports in which you have no access to either the person who saw it or the person who wrote about the person who saw it. And I thought that sounded pretty similar to the gospel accounts. So I just used the same process I would use on my cases. I really rejected anything that Christianity taught. So I was really not pessimistic, but yeah, pessimistic, skeptical. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I was going to find anything convicting at all, but as I searched through the Gospels and tested them using that same criteria, I was surprised what I found.
Now, the book that kind of made your story available to the masses was Cold Case Christianity, right?
That's right, yeah.
You've written subsequent books called God's Crime Scene, Forensic Faith, and others, but... What is your website?
It's coldcasechristianity.com. Isn't that funny, too, when you write a book, right, that kind of becomes like the thing you're standing on? It's like everything else you might do for the rest of your life, those are subsequent books.
Well, it might lead to $500,000 for a speaking engagement in Moscow.
You realize that the word sub is in the word subsequent, okay?
Yeah,
so
subsequent,
apparently those right. books don't really amount to anything.
That's right. That's right. Well, hey, Jim, let me ask you this. I saw something, maybe your publicist sent out or something that you had written about Christmas, right?
Yeah, I just think this, and let me tell you, that was pretty controversial. You'd be amazed. Once you become a Christian and you take a public platform and you start, I was a Christian probably about, I don't know, maybe 15 years before I started publicly talking about Christianity. And I think it's probably wise for anyone who becomes a new Christian just to shut up and learn for a period of time. But I will tell you that I learned that, having done this publicly now, that you think you're going to get a lot of resistance from people in the skeptical community who are not Christians. Well, Christians are divided over the issue of Christmas just as well. I get it all the time where some of us don't celebrate Christmas. I can understand why that might be the case. There are certain religious traditions within Christianity that just don't celebrate Christmas, and some that do. And really what I'm talking about, and whenever I talk about Christmas, is not the veracity of whether or not Christmas is in fact the date in which Jesus was born. as much as it is, what is it we are celebrating? What is it? What is the historical narrative that is represented by the holiday? I don't care, and I've written about this. I don't care when it was precisely. I don't think it's never delineated precisely in Scripture. But do we have any good reason to believe that there was a child named Jesus of Nazareth who was born in this miraculous way, who came as God incarnate to save us? That's what I'm talking about when I talk about the Christian story, the Christmas story, rather.
Well, Jim, this is Ed here. So what did you find out?
Well, I mean, I think there's lots of good. First of all, I would have rejected it as a non-Christian because I don't believe in anything supernatural. I just had an aversion to any kind of miraculous event. So that was my first hesitancy. But a lot of people underestimate the power, and some don't, but some of us underestimate the power of prophecy because we're not even familiar with the works of the Old Testament. You know, we might come into the Christian faith, and we might spend 90% of our time in the New Testament. We hardly ever go to the Old Testament for anything. And so unless somebody talks about it and connects the dots to the New Testament, and there are a number of prophecies that I think are better and more easily understood in their connectivity as pointing to something that actually occurred in the first century. And I think that a lot of that is described in the person of Jesus. So we have good, I think, Old Testament prophecy that does point to the Messiah coming, just the way, in fact, that Jesus came.
The Messiah. Okay, so by the way, do you write about this in your book?
I wrote about it on a blog article, actually, that's called "The Gift of Christmas Was Predicted with the Gift of Prophecy." And
okay.
That's really what I try to show people, that really we have good reason to believe this from prophecy. We see in prophecy in Genesis 49 that the Messiah is going to come from the tribe of Judah. And it's traced back to Jacob's son, Judah, in Luke 3 and Matthew 1. Jesus is in that line, the dark tribe of Judah. It also says in Jeremiah 23 that he's going to appear after the Jews return to Israel, which is, in fact, what happened. That prophecy, by the way, in Jeremiah was given between about 626 and 586 B.C., and it ends up being fulfilled in Jesus' earthly ministry. And it will be fulfilled again in the end times, of course. But you also see the Messiah is going to be born in Bethlehem in Micah 5. And there's a disagreement about that translation a little bit. Some say that if the reference is to Bethlehem is simply a reference to the bloodline of King David. Either way, it would fit. Some say it's a reference to the town of Bethlehem, but either way, Jesus fits both criteria. He's the descendant of King David, and he's born in Bethlehem, and that he would be preceded by a messenger we see in Isaiah 40. I mean, you can go on and on with this, and not only that, there's great prophecies after, which most of us are familiar with, that don't just describe the birth of the Messiah, that describe the life of the Messiah, the death of the Messiah, the way, I mean, there's so much in biblical prophecy that we could point to. And so then I would have said as an atheist, well, yeah, you guys just crafted a story that happens to fit the prophecy. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people actually believe that. But as I examined the New Testament to discover if, in fact, the writings of the New Testament were historically reliable, you're going to have a hard time denying that they were written early, denying that they aren't corroborated by several forms of internal and external evidence, denying that they haven't been changed over the years. They really haven't been changed from the earliest times. I can even demonstrate that. And then finally, you're going to have a hard time finding that these people who wrote this had some bias, some motive that would cause them to lie. Because one thing I do know is what causes people to lie. I do that for a living. And those attributes are missing amongst the initial writers of Scripture. So I think what you have is good prophecy that points to something and a reliable record that says it happened. And when that comes together, I have a tendency, look, if you come out of the grave, Frank and I say this all the time, if you're somebody who comes out of the grave, we have a tendency to believe you, okay? Whatever you say, we're probably going to believe it. So once I realized that Jesus came out of the grave, I was all in.
Jim, it's Fred Jackson here, by the way. I've enjoyed your presentations at the Apologetics Conference in Charlotte the last few years.
Oh, great. Thanks. I'm glad you're there, Fred.
Just excellent. Tell me, you mentioned, you know, prophecy being the basis of proving the Christmas story. Do you think churches are doing a very good job of taking time like you do to prove to their congregations that this just isn't a traditional celebration, but it's really based on prophecy? Christmas is real, and the reason Jesus came is for real.
No, I hate to say it, and I think you and I probably both know this. It's not just that it's about Christmas or about this one narrow area of the Christian story. It's that we really haven't done a good job. Our entry point, Look, when I became a Christian, I thought, doesn't everyone do it this way? I mean, I looked at the evidence, and I examined, parsed through all the evidence. I had a way of understanding how evidence is processed that helped me. But I went through all that evidence, and I realized, wow, this is true. And I thought, well, I guess everyone does this, right? Well, it turns out nobody does this. The two most popular responses for why people are Christians are pretty interesting. They are, number one, I was raised this way. Or number two, I had some experience, either a prayer was answered, I saw something miraculous, some experience that demonstrated for me that Christianity is true. And while those are great answers, those are also the same answers why Mormons say they are Mormons. They've had either an experience of the Holy Spirit that confirmed for them that Joseph Smith's a prophet of God, or they were raised in the Mormon church. Now, look, we got to have better answers than the people who disagree with us entirely about the nature of who Jesus is, right? I mean, we can't both be right about this, yet we're using the same entry point to both groups. It turns out that, yeah, I think we could take, look, do you realize there's a study just done by Lifeway, like a couple of months ago, they took the survey and they released, I think, last week. That the number of people that think that Christmas should be more about Jesus has shrunk by 14% in just 4 years.
Yeah,
we are in a rapid decline of connecting Jesus to the holiday altogether. And I think a lot of that's because we're on a rapid decline of maybe necessarily thinking that Christianity is true for anyone other than Christians. So what I want to make a point with young people, especially young Christians, is that, hey, this is, you can reject it. But you can't reject it because you think it's some personal opinion. Christianity is not a personal opinion. It's either objectively true or objectively false. So either you're in or you're out. I get it. But it's not a matter of opinion, like you can decide today I like ice cream, tomorrow I like cherry pie. It doesn't work that way. And so I think what we have to do as a church is help people see that this is objectively true. And the best way to do that is to connect it to the evidence.
Talking to Jay Warner Wallace. I got one final question for you. We'd like to have you back on another time, Jim, talk about this from another angle. But I have this question for you, and that is, what is your favorite crime show?
Oh, my gosh. You know how cops are. I hate every single crime show.
Come on, man. Even Blue Bloods?
I'll tell you, there's one show that actually captures what we do as homicide detectives, and you're probably not going to like it, but it's called the First 48.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
And that's a show that just has a camera on a guy's shoulder following on detectives in the first 48 hours behind him.
It's a real, it's a reality show?
Yeah, it's a reality show. Now, all the fictional shows, I'm going to tell you right now, if they created a set of TV shows about radio hosts, you would hate those too, okay?
Yeah, that's probably true. Nothing about WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Happens here, fits in with what we're doing.
That's right.
Well, anyway. Les Nessman, we have a Les Nessman around.
Wait a minute. I'm sure. Wait a minute.
We are dating ourselves to even suggest we understand any of these comments. Okay.
You don't even like Blue Bloods?
No, I do like Blue Bloods. Yeah. My mom actually likes Blue Bloods. You know, my dad has my name. His name is Jim Wallace. My name is Jim Wallace. My son's name is Jim Wallace. And all three of us have done the same thing. My son's at my agency right now. We've been at the same agency since 1961. So we get the Blue Bloods.
Yeah, it's more of a police show, I guess.
It's a cop. Yeah,
it's a cop show more than it is.
But I'll be honest, it's still stupid, okay?
Yeah, I know. Hey, but if you didn't have stupid, you wouldn't have any. I do the same thing you're doing when I'm watching TV sometimes, and I'm... And now talking to Allison, my wife, and she says, well, if that didn't happen, they wouldn't have any show. What are they going to do, show cops sitting around eating donuts all day? You think that's going to get viewers?
Yeah, I don't want them to see that part of it.
You've got to have the donut shop operator stealing money.
Yeah, you know what? If you're going to resort to stale cliches of police officers, I'm going to hang up.
Okay. Hey, all right. Thank you, Jim. What is your website again?
It's coldcasechristianity.com. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, watch out who you hang out with Turek, okay?
I know.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right. That's a fascinating, I would like to talk to him, maybe have him on again and talk about because I find it, he is a cold case detective in Los Angeles.
There's a CBS show called Cold Case when they supposedly do what he does. He thinks they're stupid, and I probably can understand that if you're, you know. But they look at cases that are closed, and they try to pursue some of these older, you know, links and try to solve the case. That'd be fascinating.
Because there are techniques today, for instance, you know, like DNA on a hair follicle.
yes.
That they didn't have back then. They can use.
Let me ask you this. So I have not seen this show, The First 48. You seen it?
Yeah, I have seen it.
Where is it? What's it on?
Well, I'm not sure if it's current right now, but it's a show. Basically, it starts off. This is the crime, and they've got really 48 hours to prove. They used what the philosophy is. You got to find something solid in the way of evidence within the first 48 hours, or the case may go cold.
Right.
So it's about police officers and what they do to try to track down
suspects. So is it like cops in terms of body cams and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, it's that kind of thing.
Okay.
There's another show, and I'm not sure if it's related to the same thing, but I've watched it from time to time, where they bring the suspect in and they question them, and it's real.
It's real. Wow.
It's detectives in, I think it's Sioux City, Iowa, and New Orleans and places like that. And you actually see, I often wonder, somewhere along the way, they had to get the suspect to sign off that you're on national television.
Yeah.
And all of your case is unfolding. And usually the show ends with so-and-so is convicted of first-degree murder, whatever the case may be. It's a fascinating show. And it speaks to these officers who are so skilled at, number one, being able to detect who's telling the lie and who's not.
Right.
But they still have to, they can't go on their feelings.
Right.
But then they have to find the evidence for this kind of thing. It's a fascinating show.
Huh. I have to check it out.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. This is called Today's Issues. If you would like to send us an email, you can do so at this address, comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. We'd love to hear from you. We certainly thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Well, our guest now is Jan Markell. Jan's with us every Thursday, most every Thursday. She is the president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries, and she hosts Understanding the Times Radio that airs on stations all over the country, including American Family Radio stations on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And Jan joins us from the Twin Cities area in good old Minnesota. How you doing, Jan?
Doing fine, thank you.
Thank you for being on with us. By the way, you spend a lot of your year preparing for your big conference. Is it October you normally hold a big conference?
It's either late September or October. Oh. This coming year, it's September 21st, yes.
We
love meeting the AFR people who come out. Lots of them do.
Yeah, I wanted to go ahead and tell folks now because you were sold out. So I say sold out. I don't know how much it cost her.
Well, but the space is taken.
Yeah, and she holds it at a big church there in the Twin Cities, but still it's packed, and then you got people watching online. But go ahead and tell folks about the conference coming up next year if they want to go ahead and put it on their calendar.
Yeah, right now the best idea would be to put it on the calendar for September 21st. We'll have Dr. Robert Jeffress. We'll have Amir Sarfati, Israeli teacher, Pastor J.D. Farag, Pastor Jack Hibbs, Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, and I'll be speaking this year. So those are the five that will be taking our time from morning till evening. And again, every year folks come up, and frankly, this past September, Fred Jackson came up and said hello.
Yeah,
so yeah.
We have AFR represented. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. So September, what day? September what?
21st.
Okay, now, what do I do if I want to come? Do I have to go register or sign up somewhere? Are you open for that yet?
No, we're not going to open tickets for a number of months yet.
Okay, okay.
For reasons that are too complicated.
I understand.
But we're just going to hold off, but right now, save the date, and there's going to be plenty of room as long as folks act quickly in say, May, June, when the tickets will be very inexpensive. Frankly, gentlemen, the church kind of forced ticketing on us because 2 years ago, we had 6,000 people in a 4,300 venue church, and so they just said, we can't do this again. You're going to have to ticket it.
Yeah.
So we have.
Yep. Also, the fire marshal won't allow
exactly
for that either. So, Jan, last night I was reading online about the U.S. Embassy now in Jerusalem, and I'm going over there in March with a group, and I was sort of just reading about some things happening in Israel and Jerusalem and so forth, and I was just, I don't know, I just had a a moment of pride there. Not mm-hmm. I think the right kind of pride that finally, you know, Israel, you know, they Jerusalem is their capital, mm-hmm. and they're getting and the U.S., you know, President Trump's leadership right there went ahead and built our. It's built now. I don't know. There may be adding some things to it, but I can't wait to at least be able to drive by and look at the new U.S. embassy. Why is that significant?
The new embassy.
Yes, the embassy. The embassy being moved from Tel Aviv. You've talked about this before, but I think it's worth repeating. Why is it significant to us that as Americans and as Christians that the embassy be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem?
Well, I personally, you know, I mean, the short version would be this is the holy city. I mean, this is the city to which Jesus Christ is going to be returning to rule and reign for 1,000 years. But before that, I think that we're acknowledging that, first of all, the Jewish people have had a relationship with this city for 3,000 years. I think we're honoring and we're blessing Israel in the process. And remember, Genesis 12:3, those who bless Israel will in turn be blessed. And I think America is experiencing a season of blessing, not that we don't have legions of problems at the same time, but we certainly have some blessing when it comes to economic issues and some other things. But so some of those are some of the reasons that I think this is important. But again, you know, there were two presidents, really three, that were an enormous blessing to Israel. The first would have been Harry Truman, 1948. The second would have been, believe it or not, Richard Nixon, because he stepped into the 1973 Yom Kippur War. Golda Meir went to him and said, Mr. President, if you don't help us, Israel is history. We will be wiped out. And Richard Nixon, who was known to make some anti-Israel statements, anti-Jewish statements in his tenure, remembered what his mother had taught him. And she said to him, if you ever get an opportunity to help the Jewish people do that, and he said, I will help you, Golda Meir, I will help you. And he did. He was a hero, if I can use that word. And the third is Donald Trump, who I think is probably the friendliest ever president to the nation of Israel. And Benjamin Netanyahu would say the same thing. And Christian Zionists all across the Western world say the same thing. And I think it's important that as conservatives, much less more Christians, that if we make a promise, not saying Donald Trump is a believer, we don't know, but when we make these promises, that we keep them.
Yeah. Hey, Jan, what's your show going to be on this weekend?
This weekend is part two of, we're looking at some signs of the times. Last week started part one with Jeff Kinley. And heard from a lot of people, including AFR people, that they really loved the insights to the lateness of the hour. And folks, are you ready? Are you ready to meet the king if he should return today? So we'll talk about it Saturday at 1 p.m. Central, Sunday 12 noon Central.
Jan, thank you so much for being on with us. God bless you.
Thanks
Take care.
Having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
You know, it's really interesting. Our previous guest there, Jim Wallace, talked about the importance of prophecy. And how we mm-hmm. use prophecy to prove that Christmas is not just a feeling.
Right.
It's not just a guess, but it's proven through prophecy. And that's what Jan's ministry deals a lot with, is Bible prophecy and looking forward, as she was just saying, part two of her series this coming Saturday. And we are looking at the signs of the times.
Well, and I'll just say this real quick because we're coming up on this break, but you want a spiritual explanation for why it looks like the whole world is against Donald Trump?
Yeah.
It could very well be, spiritually speaking, because he has stood so close and stood so tall for Israel.
Amen. Amen.
Brett, thank you for your contributions. I apologize for the who's the daddy joke. I don't know what I was thinking there. It was unprofessional of me. And you can hear the sincerity of my voice, can't you, Brett?
I can, yeah.
All right, Ed's got to deal with me 30 more minutes.
30 more.
You get to go back across the street.
That's right.
All right, folks, we'll see you back here in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.